You know that you've kind of made it when the whole introduction is Steve's here. You know, it's like, okay, it's assumed that you know who I am and all that kind of stuff. But that's great. Without real response from you, what was Christmas like for you? Did you have a good time? This last week been good for you? Well, I mean, some response. I mean, you can at least smile or nod or something. You know, okay, that kind of stuff. Okay, good. For us in our home, it kind of goes. It's in spurts, because all our kids are grown, and have they're off in their own lives and have families and all that stuff. So it's kind of like an every other year thing. Like last year, there was nobody here, and so we kind of came up with different things to do. This year, everybody was here. I mean, like everybody. And our home, we have a good size home, but when they all show up, we had people sleeping in every single room of the house at some time throughout the day, because we had like five grandsons, and they're all under five, so they're kind of everywhere, even including our laundry room. We had put in, place for one of the kids to sleep in there and put some pictures up so it kind of didn't look like a laundry room. Ruthie's art room was one of the bedrooms. I mean, every room had, it was just crazy the whole time. Everyone showed up the day before Christmas Eve, and the last of them left yesterday morning. And so for a week's time, it was just absolute chaos in our house. You know, little kids all over the place, nothing ever got fully picked up. You know, there's just junk everywhere, and you just say, yeah, that's fine, whatever. You know, and life is just happening, and we had a blast with it. But when the last ones finally left yesterday morning, my wife and I, Ruthie and I, just collapsed. You know, we had the parade on, you know, and it's like, yeah, whatever. You know, and it goes on. But I just had the games going all day, and just kind of, every once in a while I would check in to see if something was really happening. And so that we had this wild time. But one of the things that we come to this kind of time of year, and I don't know if you do any of you make resolutions? I mean, just kind of, at least. I mean, you don't have to actually acknowledge this. I mean, it's kind of time when we do that. And I'm one that kind of does. Decisions. It's just one of those easy times, the beginning of the year, to kind of make some commitments to move forward and do some things. And each year when we come to this point, I check online now to find out what the top 10 resolutions are. And they're always the same. I go back and I look at it and say, wait a minute, did you guys actually check this out? Because it looks an awful lot like last year's, you know. So what do you think, what are some of the top 10? What do you think is going to show up on the top 10? Lose weight. Okay, yes. I actually have them right here, by the way. And it's not number one. Okay, it's number two, lose weight. But it's always in the top two. I mean, it just kind of goes blink, 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 blink. Okay, what else is on there? Quit smoking. Probably not a big issue here. But yes, quit smoking or just breaking a unhealthy habit. You know, so it kind of gets all of us into that. And I can say, yeah, I got some of those. What else? What was that? Grow taller. Didn't make it. Any others? What do you think? Exercise is, absolutely on here, one of those things, or develop a healthy habit, or some kind of thing falls into that, yes. Save money? Yes, that's actually in there, and it ties number one. The one that actually kind of beats it out a bit is get out of debt. So right at the very top, in the times that we live in, the get out of debt's, not save money, but somehow find any, is right at the top there. So some of the other things that show up on here, we mentioned develop a healthy habit. Another one is get organized. Another one, spend more time with family and friends. Learn something new is on here, and that can be a new skill, talent, you know, whatever it is. This one's weird. It shows up on here, and I'm not sure who answers this one. But it's work less, play more. It's like, gosh, you know, most are just trying to find a job. You know, who answered this one, work less, play more? Particularly because the very next one behind it is find employment. So it's like, what, you know? And then I think the only one we haven't mentioned on here is help others. And that always just barely makes it. It's always like number 10. But it makes it into the top 10, okay? Help others, somehow I'm going to get involved in something and make. So, you know, making these, you know, these resolutions, I don't know if you write them down or not. I saw something or heard something just in the last day this time that most resolutions, you know, we break them. I mean, you make the resolution and it works for a day or two or maybe a week, and then we start to fall apart on it. But here's the thing. What I heard was that those who make resolutions are 10 times more likely to see those things happen than those who don't. That's interesting. I don't know where they get the stats, but I kind of like it. You know, the idea that if you make some kind of commitment to move on something, to do something, you're 10 times more likely to see that happen than if you don't. Interesting. I came across a quote back here, it's actually a couple years ago, by Henry Ward Beecher, which may not mean anything to you. It means something to me, though, because I'm somehow related to him in the past. You know, and even that doesn't matter a whole lot, because obviously, I mean, nothing passes down like that. The genes didn't make their way here. But it does create a little bit of interest. I read some biographies on him, and back in the kind of Civil War years, that era, he was a rock star. I mean, really. He didn't have a band, but he was the kind of person that would go and he was a speaker, but he would attract thousands. He was actually probably, as far as a recognizable personality and someone who was in demand, he was the number one in this country at that time. Number one. If you put his name on something, people would flock to that place just to hear him speak. Whenever they kind of did the closing ceremonies for the Civil War, I realize I was playing on the terminology, but actually did one of those, and they said, who should we get who would be the number one guy to speak at this thing? Beecher. That's the guy. So, fascinating thing. All that to say, in doing this, I came across a quote from him. Now, realize this is put in terminology that comes out in the 1800s, so he didn't get the idea of including necessarily women in the statement. But you are in this. You're included in this. It's just the way they said things then. Okay? So here's his statement. He says, every man should be born again on the first day of January. Start with a fresh page. Take up another hole in the buckle or let one out, depending on the circumstance. He said, on the first day of January, let every man gird himself once more, face to the front, and take no interest in things that were or are in the past. Interesting. And he said that as he traveled around the country at this time of year. That everyone should be born again, okay, not in the spiritual sense, but start over again. Have kind of a fresh page and move on things. And whether you buy into that fully or not, there's still something said about that I think is, there's something valid in that. This is a great time for you kind of making some decisions to move forward. Now, with that thought there, let me add something else in this. Okay, we're going to build some layering of some pictures here and then drop into some scriptures, which we will get there. Another thought that I want to pair with that is this idea that at this time of year, there are a whole bunch of these shows that come out that are kind of the year in review things. You seen some of those already? I've already seen probably half a dozen of them. Those things where they go back and they show you 2010, and they go, and they roll through it. And they're kind of amazing to me because a lot of those things I thought happened years ago. You know, it's been that long. They happened at the front end of the year, and you, the story is played out, and they come back and say, no, that was this year. Now, so what are some of the things that happened in 2010? Some of the news things, the interactive time. The miners and the rescue, fantastic story, absolutely. What else? The oil spill? Yes, big deal, yes. And that's kind of interesting, too, because it's played out. It's no longer a big story now, right? But it was big. What else? San Bruno forest fire. Come on. What's that? Yes. Okay. Okay. One of the ones that goes all the way back to this time last year. Haiti. The earthquake. I mean, doesn't that seem like that happened years ago? You know, and yet that was this time last year when that all kicked in. And you go through a whole pack of these things. We went through a political year where some of the stupidest things on earth were ever said. You know, and they've quoted them all now. You know, they're putting those things. You know, here's worst quotes of the year. You've seen some of those. Most of those come out of the political thing. Okay, but there's all sorts of this stuff. We go back and we look at a whole year now. If we personalize this and said, what was your year like? You'd have a story to tell. I'm not going to ask you to do that. But in your mind, I want us to start rolling. If you went back and kind of rehearsed what your year was like, what are some of the features of that? What kinds of things happened? I went back and I started thinking through my year. And man, there was a lot that happened in that year. 2010 was big with a lot of stuff for me. But I'm sure it was for you too. A whole bunch of stuff that happened. Now let me ramp it one more. In 2010, what was your spiritual life like? What things happened in your walk with Christ? How did you develop in your walk with Christ in 2010? If you went back and kind of rolled through there, what were some of the features of that? In fact, if you were to look at 2010 as maybe a chapter, what would be the chapter title? I did some interesting things over this past year. I had a number of focus groups I sat down with, believers, and asked them to describe for me how they had seen their life changing, not changed, but changing, kind of an ongoing thing, over the last 5 years. And the fascinating thing to me was that there were very, very few people who could answer that question. It was interesting. Now, how have you seen your life changing? Well, You know? And then they would default to saying, I'm involved more with my church. I said, no, I'm not looking for that. I want to know, how have you seen your life changing? How are you different now? Or becoming different? What is God doing to stir inside you and somehow shape you? What's that looking like? And this was even after I had seeded the question before I showed up. I said, okay, here's the question I'm going to ask you. So they had time to think about it. You know, and you'd pose it out there, you'd throw the question out, and it was like everyone has that deer in the headlight type of look. Like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Or someone would say, well, you know, I've been a believer for a long time now. What do you want? So here's the thing I want to pose to you this morning. The decisions that you make at the beginning of this year will, to a large extent, determine the story you tell at the end of this year. Think about that. We're all, you might say, kind of ordinary prophets. And there's some things that, you know, you don't need some kind of big vision from heaven saying, here's what it's going to look like out here a year from now. There's some things that, by making certain decisions now in your spiritual life, in your walk with Christ, that will actually dramatically influence the story that is told at the end of 2011. And the lack of those decisions will also play into that story. You can forecast, so to speak, in just kind of the ordinary sense of the terminology, much of what will happen in your story over the course of this year by the decisions you make now. Think about that. And with all that, now I want to take you into the Scriptures. I want to provide kind of a biblical place to build some things out. Okay, so in your Bibles, find Philippians, that place right there. Philippians chapter 2, verses 12 and 13. Philippians 12, 13. While you're finding that, or 2, 12, and 13. While you're finding that, let me give you just a little bit of the story that is the backstory on this. If you were to read through the book of Acts, which is kind of gives the history of the kind of early stages of the church, you'd find as you got to chapter 16 of that and kind of in the middle of that, that as one of the key figures in that, Paul and his team that kind of gets traded out as they're going along, they make their way to this Greek city called Philippi. And this is in a whole series of things. But they come to Philippi, and up until then, you find a whole bunch of this thing where they just said they went here, and then they went here, and then they went here, and they went here. But when they get to Philippi, the story slows down. And they talk about, you know, Luke, who writes it, talks about what happened in Philippi. Because it was kind of different from where everything was going on, okay? And at this point, the actual team that's out there is Paul and just one other guy, Silas. And they come into Philippi, and they encounter some of what are described as God-fearers. Okay, people who already, they have a kind of a basic understanding that God has something, you know, some kind of claim on their life, and they're desiring to get that filled out in some way. Paul shows up and provides them with the answer. Tells them all about the gospel, about salvation, and builds this thing out for them. And it says that he stays there, you know, Paul and Silas, they stay there for a long time. This wasn't a quick, you know, weekend shot. But several times in the account, it says they stayed there for many days. And while he is there, they establish a church, and Paul helps them kind of sort it all out. Gives them not just a whole bunch of information, but helps them work out the details of this. What does this look like in your life? Helps them kind of connect it to their relationships with each other. Helps them connect it to their life and their occupation. Helps them connect this to issues of guilt in their life. Helps them connect it to all sorts of things so that it touches every single aspect of their life. And while he's there, he's kind of the coach for them. And then due to, if you read through the account, you'll find that at the end there's kind of this weird thing that happens, and they have to leave. That just seems, you go find out what the weird thing is. But because of that, he leaves them and is concerned about what's going on with them on all sorts of levels. And so he writes a letter back to them, which is what we have here, the letter to the Philippians. Writes a letter back and talks through a number of these things. One of those things being he's concerned about their progress as believers, about how they are developing, how they are moving forward, about how their spiritual life is actually taking form. And it's at that point we jump into this letter here, because he makes a very specific statement that I believe plays to us here. He says this. Now, if you haven't found it by now, you're not going to. So that's all the time you get, okay? He says this. He says, "So then, my beloved, just as you have always obeyed, not only as in my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling." Let's just take that much of it. He refers back to what I was just talking with you about, that time that he was with them. And says, okay, now when I was there, I was part of this thing. And it's cool that, back then, that was one thing when I was there. And as we kind of were working this out, he was kind of the coach for them as they were developing what this meant to be followers of Jesus and what the gospel meant in all the aspects of their life. And he says, while I was there, you obeyed. He's not saying like I was the boss and you had to do what I said. But rather you listened under what I said and you put it into action. He was a coach. He was a trainer. Back here a few years ago, as kind of a follow-on to one of the decisions I made in January, I got a personal trainer. Okay. You ever had one of those? I never had. And so I thought, this would be really cool. Get a personal trainer. Plus, if nothing else, I can tell everybody, I have a personal trainer. I mean, that was worth a price right there. And I played it up. Everybody I talked to, you know, I'd somehow maneuver the conversation around and say, by the way, I have a personal trainer. Yeah, he and I, we get together and look at that. But it was interesting because we sat down, you know, and right, you know, we talked through what my goals were, and I had some very specific things I wanted to do. And he said, okay, fine, we'll put together a plan, and I will work this through with you. And we did. You know, we worked together this plan, and we would get together, and he'd show up in all his stuff, and I'd show up, and he'd say, okay, here's the deal. And he would tell me what to do, and I'd go do it. Very compliant. Even though most of what he was telling me to do, in my head, I'm going, you're kidding me, really? But we worked through these things, and as we did, he would adjust the schedule, and it got harder and harder as we went, because this was fine on entry level, but then we're going to go here, and now it's here. I mean, and the expectations went up, and as long as he was there, it was interesting. When he was there watching me, I did every single thing he said exactly the way he said it. But then when he would not be there, I had this weird thing that went on in my head. Like, you know, I don't really have to do 20 of those. I'll just do it until I kind of feel kind of like I've worked out enough. And I don't know, maybe it's 15 or less. Or maybe I'll just skip that one this time. I mean, that kind of thing. Now, I did do most of what he said. But I had that kind of thinking go on. He's not watching me. I don't have to do this, you know. But that's exactly the picture that Paul is building here. He says, while I was there, you were doing this thing. I was running alongside you and said, okay, now here's what you're going to do next. Okay, now let's talk about how this fits into this part of your life. And he would work this out with them, which is the terminology here. Working out the salvation. Bringing it to the surface, bringing to life the very things that you claim to believe, putting them into action. And so when he writes them, he says, now, it was one thing when I was there, but even more importantly, now that I'm not there, that you continue working out this salvation. One of the points that I'd like to drop into this at this point is that in order to make progress in your spiritual life, one of the first things is that you have to take ownership for your own spiritual development. That's what he's telling me. One thing when I was there, because basically I owned it. You were just doing what I said. But now that I'm not there, you need to continue on with this, and it's going to be your decision to do this. You're going to have to go through that thought process of thinking out, what does this mean in this area of life? What does it mean concerning this issue? How am I going to develop in my spiritual life? How am I going to work out, bring to the surface, bring to life the salvation that God has given to me? So, first piece there, in order to make progress in your spiritual life this year, part of what you've got to do is take ownership for this. Your faith must become your own, not somebody else's. Now, if you continue on with this, this whole idea of working out your salvation, we can develop it even farther. Because when we think about salvation here, perhaps some of the thoughts that come to mind are just that point where you prayed and you asked Jesus to be your Savior. And you say, I'm saved. And even this terminology may kind of be weird to you. Work out my own salvation? I thought Jesus did all that and it's done. Well, it is. But like I've already hinted at least, the salvation, the way he's talking about it here is not earning your salvation as in God's forgiveness and life forever with him. But it's salvation in terms of how that plays out in your life. It's kind of like, you might say, salvation in the present tense.